Aloha, Rick Sengaria, Vermont Edition. This podcast has been edited for brevity, so enjoy. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This has not been a year where I've had a lot of downtime for leisurely reading, but one of my goals for 2018 is to find a way to claw back the hours for that favorite pastime. Because, frankly, sometimes we all need a break. I miss good fiction, but also deep dives into the history behind the current events that are moving so quickly. If all you read are headlines and news stories and some long-form journalism sprinkled in, don't you think you're missing some of the joy of reading that gets us in touch with our humanity and imagination? I certainly do. So help a gal out. Tell me what I should read. Better yet, tell us all what we should be reading. Let's share. Let's revel. Let's get inspired together. Here to share in our joy of reading and help us with that inspiration part are three great guests. Claire Benedict is co-owner of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Jane.
Andrea Jones is co-owner of the Galaxy Bookshop in Hardwick. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
And Amy Olson is library director at Lanfear Memorial Library in Hyde Park. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
I'm thrilled to have you all here. And Amy, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Give us a recommendation.
Well, one of the books that I have really loved this year, and readers in our library have too, is Beartown by Frederick Backman. He's the author of A Man Called Uwe that was incredibly popular. And I think that this book is very different. I think fans of Jodi Picoult's book would really like this book. Beartown's a tiny community in the forest of a small, economically depressed town in Sweden, and all their hopes are lying on the junior hockey team. But when a violent act leaving a young girl traumatized kind of affects the whole town, there's sort of that gray area of what the town will do.
Hmm. And you actually liked reading this. Do you get lost in books when you're reading them, or do you feel like it's work?
Oh, no, sure. I definitely get lost in it. Never work.
Claire, you got a good recommendation?
I do, and it's a good one to get lost in,
good.
Too. It's called The Heart's Invisible Furies by John Boyne. It's a novel that I'm just totally in love with. It's the story of Cyril Avery, pretty much from the womb through old age. It's his story. He's adopted as a baby by an eccentric couple in Dublin in the 40s. And Cyril struggles to find his identity as a gay boy and man in Ireland. And it's also a little bit about Ireland's identity, too. And it's just a warm, funny, engaging story. It's very character-driven. It's a lot of great characters, Cyril and his various friends and family. And it's almost 600 pages long, which sounds like a lot, but you get to the end of it and you don't want it to end because you just want to spend more time with him and his world. And it's just – it's a great, great cozy curl up with book.
When you say you get lost in it, is it the writing that's so good or just the characters and how they're portrayed?
Well, this book is both. It's like the writing is great, the characters are great, it has some poignant and sad parts, but it also has some really funny parts, so it just kind of balances out too. I think that makes a perfect book.
Andrea, number three, what's a recommendation for you?
The book I'm most excited about in the whole entire world right now is the new illustrated edition of The Princess Bride by William Goldman. I'm a huge
That's
princess.
High praise, the book you're most excited about in the whole world.
I think this is probably the best book ever written.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. No big deal.
I think so. It's the best read-aloud book for sure, and this edition's gorgeous. And what's fun about this edition is there's a whole new introduction by William Goldman that gives more of the mythological backstory of this book written by the fictional S. Morgenstern. And there's a bonus first chapter of a new possible new book called Buttercup's Baby. The first chapter is called Fezzik Dies. Don't worry. But the book is so fun. He creates this mythology where, you know, that he was being sued by the Morgenstern family and lost in litigation for all these years because he did such a bad job writing the good parts version of the Princess Bride story. And he finally gets approached by the family and they say, we're going to stop the litigation. It's okay. The only thing is you have to sign off that you will not write Buttercup's Baby. We're going to give that to Stephen King. He's actually from Florin, and he has relatives there, and he's a big hero. So we're going to give it to Stephen King. Just sign off. But But Bill Goldman has a grandson who really wants him to write this story. He wants to do right by his grandson. So there's a quick trip to Maine and a sit down with Stephen King. And Stephen King, you know, admonishes him, did you even go to Florin? You did a horrible job. Okay, we'll let you give one, you know, we'll let you try one chapter. And then at the end, you get to read that one chapter he tries. And you can make up your mind for yourself if he did a good job or not. But a lot of people don't know in The Princess Bride that there's so much more than was in the movie. And the movie's awesome, too. But scenes about, you know, the zoo of death and how Buttercup became the most beautiful woman in the world because at first she was not.
So is this only going to be good for real Princess Bride nerds, though?
No, this is going to be good for anybody who's ever liked a book ever. It has everything in it. It really does for everybody.
You are really putting yourself out there on this.
That's a confident recommendation.
I guarantee it. Yeah, okay. So I guess I'll say if somebody comes to the Galaxy Bookshop and they buy this book and they hate it, I'll refund your money.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. You heard it here, folks.
You will not hate it.
All right. Well, if you would like to challenge Andrea on that, our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Jan wrote in to recommend Fasting and Feasting, The Life of Visionary Food Writer Patience Gray by Adam Fetterman. Jeff says, just last night I finished reading Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook by Mark Bray, which I think is a very important book. I lived in Charlottesville for 18 years, and what happened there this summer shook me to my core. Bray, a Dartmouth College professor, has written a book that includes a history of the resistance to fascist ideas and movements and racist actions in general, from the start of modern fascism in Europe before World War II to right-wing oppression in other countries in the years since to fighting neo-Nazis in America today. And I would add on to Jeff's recommendation, we actually talked with Mark Bray about the book and about the movement earlier this year, and maybe we can put a link to it on the show page today at the bottom of the page in related programs if you'd like to listen to Mark Bray talk about his book and talk about that movement. Rachel in Jamaica says, I cannot stop talking about A Horse Walks Into a Bar by the Israeli novelist David Grossman. One of the best books I have read in my life. Oh, that's a, you know, maybe there's a
challenge.
Little, yeah. Grossman is just crazy good, Rachel says. This is his best novel by far, and he's written many great novels. But a warning, one will want to throw the book against the wall for the first 20 or 30 pages. It is downright repulsive. I like that because otherwise you might get 10, 20, 30 pages in and say, what is she talking about, and not read the book. And let's go to Nancy calling in from Hardwick. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you. I read this weekend the book by Holly Spofford, a woman from Pennsylvania who was a teacher for years and a coach. And it's about teenagers who discovered a generational murder mystery that has not been solved. And it was the great uncle of the boy, Nicholas, and his dear friend. It's very good for, I think, young people who really want a mystery, and a mystery that keeps moving. And it also has to do with the countryside because it's in Virginia, but they are golfers. So the psychological golfing part of it is really good, and Holly is a coach, so she has a lot of golfing tips in it, but it all weaves throughout the story until they discover what they were seeking, which was who killed their great uncle, and they finally do. And I really recommend it for a summer mystery story.
And is it still good to read in the wintertime, do you think, Nancy? Is this going to transport us back to warm weather?
In the snowstorm, I loved reading it. It's called A Letter for Hoot. And she's very good at even pointing out what they're eating, and it's really, really good kid food. And they ride their bikes everywhere, and the adventure moves quickly. So I highly recommend it for any age, really, but mostly for the age group that is still riding bikes.
Well, isn't that all of us? Nancy, thanks for the recommendation. I really appreciate it. Nichol's calling in from Guilford. Hi, Nichol. What do you have to recommend?
Hi, Jane. As always, on these calls, on these shows, so many books. In recent months, I've been reading a lot of poetry. Poetry could be a whole show by itself. But I want to mention a couple of relatively small books that I've really been recommending to friends, both by the poet Ted Kooser. He was the poet laureate in like 2004, U.S. poet laureate. And both are in the form of, they're basically sort of postcard poems. The first was one that he wrote with his friend, the writer Jim Harrison, and they spent a long period of time sending basically postcards back and forth to each other. With most of them are quite short, very epigrammatic, very almost like haiku. I mean, they're very lovely. I particularly enjoy reading books like this that are sort of conversational, because it's like listening to two old friends sitting around chatting. And the other book which he wrote is a series of postcards was called Winter Morning Walks. He had Kuster had undergone some therapy for cancer, and with part of that was he had to get up and take morning walks before the sun came up in his native, I believe he's from Iowa or Nebraska. And anyway, he wrote like a series of those. But these are just great little books, and I would recommend them to anyone.
Nichol, thanks for the recommendations. I could use some poetry myself, and I love Ted Kooser as well, so that's great to hear. One of the things that I have found for myself, at least, is, you know, I'm moving so quickly. I'm always on the move. I feel like, you know, I have maybe an hour at night, and that's to decide whether to, you know, get prepped for tomorrow, or maybe watch some series that everybody seems to be talking about, or, you know, hey, maybe check in with my partner and see, you know, how his day was. There's a lot of demands on that time, so often where I find I have the time for that kind of reading is actually audiobooks in the car. And Amy, I understand you do a lot of audio.
I do. I have a commute to work, so I listen to books a lot. One of my very favorites didn't get great reviews in print, but the audio is read by Paul Michael. It was amazing. It's called Lottery by Patricia Wood. It's a story of 32-year-old Perry L. Crandall, who has a low IQ. He's lived with his grandmother his whole life. And when she dies, he keeps up their tradition of buying a lottery ticket every week, and he wins $12 million. Mm. But suddenly, family members come out of the woodwork for nefarious intent, and he has sort of this band of homemade family, a little misfit of family. And it's a very triumphant, heartwarming story. The narrator is amazing. He does a great job of translating the book. And fans of Forrest Gump will really like this audio. And another great one was The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit by Michael Finkel. That was a great listen, but the book is also very popular. It's a story of a man who lived in the Maine woods for 27 years, and we were discussing it before we went on air. The three of us have all read it. And
it's nonfiction, right?
It's nonfiction, yeah. Right.
It was an incredible story. Yeah. And the book is good.
Supposedly nonfiction.
Supposedly nonfiction?
There's some debate.
Really?
There's some debate from those of us who grew up in Maine at this time about whether that was really possible. Yeah.
Oh, so it's whether the story is true or not that
correct.
That you debate.
Interesting.
Correct. Interesting. So, Amy, when you talk about especially the previous book that you were, what was the name of that one again?
Lottery.
Lottery. So when you say it didn't get great print reviews, but the audio is fantastic, do you think that actually it's a different experience when you listen to it than when
oftentimes
you read it?
I do think it is. We have a poster at the library that is sort of like a chalkboard writing, audiobooks are not cheating, audiobooks are not cheating. Yeah, I definitely think. And I also think reading books out loud to your children or family members, you kind of get that as a reader.
I listened to all of the Harry Potter books, at least the first three that had come out when I was in college, and I was training for a marathon, and that's how I trained. I listened to Harry Potter. And so there are parts of the Charles River in Boston and Cambridge where I still picture Dobby the house elf because that's what I was listening to when I was running. And
sure.
It's in your head in a different way.
And I've listened to other books by Jim Dale who read
He's
those books.
Fantastic.
And I can't get Harry Potter out of my head when I'm listening to it. It takes me a while to get into the new story that he's narrating. So
yeah, they're like
too,
actors.
Where you kind of get associate a narrator with a certain series or books as well.
I'm in the studio today with Andrea Jones, co-owner of the Galaxy Bookshop in Hardwick, Claire Benedict, co-owner of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, and Amy Olson, library director at Lanfear Memorial Library in Hyde Park. They're sharing some fabulous books that they think should be on your winter reading or winter gift lists. We are collating and keeping track of all of the recommendations, and it takes us a little while, but we put them up online. So if there are any that sounded particularly good to you, but you didn't have time to write down the author or the full title, check back at vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition later on today, and you'll be able to get the whole list. Ray says, I'm currently reading a collection of novellas by Joe Hill called Strange Weather. Though I haven't finished it, it's worth the price for a story called Loaded. That's a story centered on the gun debate, stand your ground laws, law enforcement, and the press. A very thoughtful, empathetic story. Mr. Hill is a fantastic genre writing, is fantastic at genre writing, and from the heart-shaped box to his comic story Lock and Key, it's not possible for me to feel more comfortable with a current writer. Our own Mitch Wertlieb, who should probably host this show because he loves books more than anybody I know, says The Dinner Party by Joshua Ferris is his recommendation. Mm-hmm. Ferris is a master at telling a story with a big reveal without spelling out what that is. The title story is a perfect example. It's about a troubled married couple who are having another couple over for dinner. When the friends don't show up, the husband goes over to their apartment to find that they're throwing a cocktail party to which he and his wife were not invited. And Mitch also recommends Swallowed by the Cold, the collection of stories by Johnson State College professor Jensen Beach. He won this year's Vermont Book Award for the collection, which draws heavily on experiences he had living in Sweden. Andrea Jones, will you share another recommendation with us?
To piggyback on the audiobook conversation, there's a book called Beauty Queens, a young adult novel by Libba Bray. And it makes a great audiobook because there are 50 Miss Teen Dream contestants whose plane crashes on an island on the way to the contest. And so it's sort of a teen beauty pageant, Lord of the Flies. And the story is told from multiple points of view as from all these teen dream contestants. And hearing all of their different voices is awesome. The reader's great. Libba Bray has a really snarky and on-point sense of humor. And this, while they're on the island, you learn that some of the contestants aren't there because they want to be beauty queens. Some are very subversive. Some are, trying to move up in the world and feel this is their only way. There's all kinds of stuff going on, but there's also some nefarious deeds happening on the other side of the island that I won't give away, but it's a great read, and largely because you get to hear all the different characters' points of view and the reader does all their voices, and it's awesome.
Wow, so it's one reader doing all of the voices for all 50 of the, or however many get to have.
I'd say there's
parts.
About probably 12 or 13 different characters that you get to hear their voices, and yeah, the reader does the voices for all of them.
Wow, that's very cool. Claire, all right, you've been left out. Another book recommendation for you.
Yeah, I don't really have an audiobook recommendation. I do have, if you want a really creepy, dark kind of book, Ill Will by Dan Shaun came out earlier this year, and I just love this book. I ripped through this one. He is a brilliant writer, and this is what they call a literary thriller. It's about this man who is a therapist, and his wife has recently died. He's trying to parent his two teenage sons. And his a violent act in his childhood, not his act, but from his family, kind of resurfaces. And there seems to be maybe a serial killer in town, but maybe it's just accidents. The police just think it's accidents, but some people think it's a serial killer. And this character, Dustin, gets drawn into these all of these stories all at once during a very vulnerable time. And it's kind of him being sucked down the rabbit hole of this sinister world. And it's a real thriller.
What's it called again?
It's called Ill Will by Dan Shaun.
Ill Will. Ooh, that sounds good. All right. Another recommendation from our listeners. Karen is calling in from Hardwick. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I had to call because I consider both Claire and Andrea my local bookshop. So I'm glad to hear them on the show.
Good.
Hi, Karen.
And the book I wanted to recommend The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. It's really incredible, thorough, lengthy, but very readable history of the migration of African Americans from the South to the north and western parts of the United States. And I just think it's a really well-written, like I said, thorough account of America's history in a way that I have never heard it told before.
That's The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. It came out a couple of years ago, and boy, I listened to some interviews with her that were just fascinating. It sounds like a wonderful book. I haven't read it either, but it's on my list. It's in my bookshelf, so I'm glad to hear you recommend it. Thank you so much. Another recommendation from Lynette in Greensboro Bend. Another, you know, she could split the difference, too, among the bookstores. Hi, Lynette. Go right ahead.
Hi. I have to another shout out to the Galaxy. They take such good care of my husband Pear and have brought all kinds of wonderful books into our lives, including Fanny Flagg and Billy Letts. I can't more highly recommend the two of them. I also wanted to do a shout out for The East Window by a retired farmer in East Montpelier, John S. Hall, which is a book I will read over and over again. But my love letter right now is Pat Conroy. I love this man. I've read The Water is Wide, South Abroad, and now I'm getting near the end of Beach Music, and it's 775 pages, and I don't want it to end. This man is a genius for taking you so many different directions and such good characters. And I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Lynette, remind us of the title by Pat Conroy.
The Pat Conroy book that I'm reading now is Beach Music, and it's my favorite that I've read of him so far.
Oh, thanks for that recommendation. Really appreciate it. Beach Music sounds wonderful. Are any of you Pat Conroy fans? No, nope, we're getting this. All right, so Lynette, you win. You have told us about a new one. We got a note from Lyndham who says, Jewelweed by David Rhodes was recommended by Bear Pond Books, and I found it to be one of those books that will stay with me forever. And I'm going to take the opportunity then to also share a book that was recommended by Bear Pond Books for me for my kids. And this is a book called Animals Are Delicious. And it's by Sarah Hutt. It's illustrated by Dave Ladd and Stephanie Anderson. And it's actually a set of three accordion books that come in a box. And I know it sounds a little gruesome, Animals Are Delicious, but it's really just explains the food chain to kids. So each one goes through a different ecosystem. And they all spread out, and it starts with zooplankton in the Arctic one, or leaves that aphids feed on, or in the other one that I like, it's strawberries. And so strawberries are fed by the sun, and they turn the sunlight into food, but someone nearby is hungry. And so then you go to the next page, and it's a slug! And you have to say it that way, because there's this suspense on every page. What is it that's hungry? And it's sort of creeping through part of the page. You can see a little bit of whatever animal it is. It's not gruesome. It doesn't actually depict anybody eating anybody else. But if, like me, you are trying to explain the natural world and the actual world order to your very little kids, it's a really straightforward look and kind of a beautiful accordion book. And it's so tactile that I think kids of very young ages like it. They like the pictures. So that's my recommendation. Animals Are Delicious. And let's go to Tim in Westminster West. Hi, Tim. What are you recommending?
Hi, am I on?
You are on.
Am I on? Okay, thank you. The author I'd like to recommend is a woman from Maine named Eleanor Morse, and I'm enamored by all three of her books. I've just finished the last one, and she writes. I think she writes about places she's been, and the latest one is White Dog Fell from the Sky. And it takes place in South Africa, and it's about a boy and a dog that escaped South Africa during apartheid, and then befriend a white woman in Botswana, and it's wonderfully written. All her books are character driven. I recommend them highly, and you can't put them down, and you're very sad to leave the people that she introduces you to.
Tim, thanks for that recommendation for Eleanor Morse. I appreciate that. Michael says, I first read Homer's Odyssey in the fourth grade, a young adult prose version, and it changed my life. I continue to read it over and over, all different translations, and now own about 30 versions, including various reimaginings and scholarly books about it. Did you know that there is a translation by T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, under the pseudonym of T.E. Shaw? There is a new translation that is changing me and other devotees' view of the work as no other has since the fourth grade. Emily Wilson's version is the first by a woman, and it is just beautiful. It flows and draws you directly into the story. And then there is Daniel Mendelsohn's An Odyssey, which is his beautiful telling of the time his 82-year-old father decided to audit Daniel's college course on the Odyssey, followed up by a cruise to the sites depicted in the story. Michael, thank you for that recommendation. I actually love that idea of reading 30 different translations or more of one book and seeing something new in each one and how each new translation changes that story a little bit. Any of you have books like that you either read over and over, or stories that, you know, like The Princess Bride, it's sort of reimagined in this new telling, and often we see this cycling of stories coming back, and either it's an ancient story or a new way of telling sort of the same stereotypical story about, you know, our region. Any of you? I know I'm putting you on the spot. Oh, Andrea, you got one.
Well, there's a book from the 1940s that came out. It was called Don Fendler, Lost on a Mountain in Maine. And it was a true story about a young boy, I think he was maybe 12 at the time, who was lost for several days on Mount Katahdin in northern Maine. He gets separated from his party. And just recently, a graphic novel version came out of that story called Lost Trail, 9 Days Alone in the Wilderness. And it talk about taking an old story and making it new for a new audience, especially where graphic novels are so popular right now and the artwork in them is so fabulous. So that's a story I was really excited to see come around again.
And it's just as good?
It's just as good. Yeah, I think it is, because it's a great story of survival and adventure. And Don Fendler passed away, I think, within the last 2 years, which maybe was the impetus for them to try doing this again. But it's a great story, and it's captivating, and the graphic novel's really good.
There's also a graphic novel of The Lottery that we did a show on not so long ago that's pretty interesting to see. I mean, that story is one that I think people will recommend, Shirley Jackson's story, and it's about a town where every year there's a pretty gruesome lottery and somebody gets stoned. And seeing it in graphic form was a really different way to read that novel or that story for me, and I really enjoyed that. I can't remember the author, so if one of the producers can put it on screen, I'll read it, and otherwise we'll post a link to it at vpr.net. Amy, I know for you, you have some books on your recommended list that are movie titles now, too.
Yeah, well, in the retelling of a story in movie version, of course, at the library, whenever a book is made into a movie, the book becomes very popular again. People want to either read it before the movie comes out or have seen the movie and want more information through the book. But one of my very favorites, you know, the popularity of Wonder Woman as the blockbuster film, and then the Justice League, and also a smaller film that was made called Professor Marston and His Wonder Women. A book by Jill Lepore, who is a writer for The New Yorker, is called The Secret History of Wonder Woman. And it's the story of the man who created Wonder Woman and how he was influenced by feminists and suffragettes, and also invented the lie detector test. He was incredibly intentional about every aspect of who Wonder Woman was going to be. And he also led a very bizarre secret life as well. So this book explores a different kind of origin story for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, much more interesting than you would guess Wonder Woman's origin was.
Absolutely. Just, you mean his story or actually the
Yeah, this book tells the story. How he created her, the influences in his life that led to him creating Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and I think any true fan of Wonder Woman will really like this version of the origin story.
He had some interesting romantic ideas. Is that part of what I'm remembering?
Mm-hmm. Sure. He lived a very non-traditional at-home life with his married wife and his another woman who he had children with.
Good. Oh, sounds good. I mean, everything is so interesting. Oh, and also, so I was talking about The Lottery, and it's the graphic novel, the authorized graphic novel, is by Miles Hyman, who is Shirley's grandson. So thanks to Rick for posting that on the screen for me and jogging my memory. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and it's our annual winter reading show, today with Claire Benedict, co-owner of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, Andrea Jones, co-owner of the Galaxy Bookshop in Hardwick, and Amy Olson, library director at Lanphier Memorial Library in Hyde Park. And I'll remind you that all of the recommendations that we talk about in the show will be up there in some form or another, either in that discuss forum where people are sharing recommendations, or as we get them all collated and organized and spell-checked, we'll put them up on our page as well. We got a note from Lori in Milton who recommended This Is How It Begins, and she writes, this is a debut novel by a dear friend of mine and a wonderful novel. Prepare to be drawn in from the beginning and left wanting more at the end. And she joins Kathy in Montpelier, who also recommends This Is How It Begins. It's by Joan Dempsey, and she says, it's an exciting page-turner novel that's a great read. This timely novel explores questions of discrimination, free speech, and religious freedom, political differences, and the importance of empathy through the eyes of an 85-year-old Polish grandmother, Ludka, who survived World War II in the Warsaw Ghetto. Linda says, Tom Green's latest, If I Forget You, I read it in 2 days, didn't sleep much. Please buy and read all of his previous books, too. And while we're talking about local authors, two local authors wrote in to share one another's books. C.W. Wolf says, I love the winter reading show. If I had one must-read book for this winter, it would be The Earth is Our Altar by Vermont author Jana Mason of Paulet. This book really makes you think about what's important in the modern world. It's print on demand, which tells you how important the earth is to the author. And Jana Paulet then writes in to say, I'd like to suggest The Unknown Pip and Chantera by C.W. Wolf. These are the first two books in a trilogy, and they are wonderful. Filled with magic, mystery, and ancient wisdom that carry the reader away, C.W. Wolf is a Vermont resident and has a great gift with words and storytelling. I can't wait for the third book. Tell us yours, 800-639-2211. And Claire, you're pointing at me. Claire Benedict.
I have a Vermont author to recommend as well. M.T. Anderson has a new book called Landscapes with Invisible Hands. And he is a brilliant mind. He has a brilliant mind. And he has written this wildly creative, quite original and funny young adult book. It's technically young adult, although I think the material is perfect for adults as well. And it's set in the future where it's kind of this dystopian future where aliens are the Earth's rich overlords. They're the one percenters. There's a political message here. And it's about a teenage boy who has to get creative to help his family survive in this economy. And it's really more about economy than about aliens. So if aliens put you off, don't worry about it. They're barely characters. They're but it's kind of a scathing political commentary on our times and politically or economically speaking. But he's just brilliant, and it's – The creativity is amazing. It's the kind of book you read. I read in one sitting. I couldn't stop reading it because I just had to keep going. And it makes you marvel at what goes on in this author's brain.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I actually listened when we were talking about audiobooks earlier. M.T. Anderson's book Feed is a wonderful audiobook because it's about microchips implanted in young people's brains in this sort of dystopian future. And there's a lot of great audio beyond just the words in that audio version of the book, so I highly recommend that. Mm. While we're talking local authors, Amy, Andrea, got any local ones?
There are two local authors who have books coming out in January worth keeping your eyes open for. One is Heartspring Mountain by Robin MacArthur, and it's a novel that takes place in the days following Hurricane Irene in southern Vermont, but also go back through several generations of one family on this mountain, Heartspring Mountain. And it talks about how you can be connected to a place and whether or not your knowing your full history affects your connection to a place. And I really like that one. And the other one is Points North by Howard Frank Mosier, who we lost about a year ago. That one's coming out in January, and that's also a collection of short stories that take place in Kingdom County. And it reads like a beautiful farewell and love story both to Kingdom County, Vermont, and also to the many of the characters and families that he's written about before that we all loved. And that one, it made me cry, but they were happy tears. I felt like I got one last gift.
Were you crying because you miss Mosher? I mean, what a wonderful...
I didn't know him well, but I miss his writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I miss his writing and miss his presence, too. Monica is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Monica. Go right ahead.
This is me. I wanted to recommend, and you were talking about writing that would connect us to what's going on currently in other countries. So my read this year was Exit West. And as any true reader, if you don't know how to pronounce the name, it's because you only read it. But it's M-O-H-S-I-N. His last name is H-A-M-I-D. And it's a somewhat dystopian love story, but very contemporary, very real. The only part that's maybe fantasy is these doors that appear, but you can also believe those are people who help, you know, displaced refugees. Starts out with two young students, the girl in her traditional garb who rides a motorcycle, but they meet in a war-torn city, and they end up in London and then the United States, and it just weaves a very poignant and unexpected story, both through what actually happens to them and the type of love that they have.
Hmm. Oh, that sounds wonderful. And it's Exit West. And I'm going to try it too, Monica. It's Mohsin Hanid who wrote this book. Thank you very much for that recommendation. Holly recommends The Legacy of Luna, written by Julia Butterfly, a nonfiction diary about a woman who spent 2 years in an ancient redwood. Gladys in Denver says Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver is her recommendation. James posted three favorites. For fiction, Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders, with a moving image at its center, Lincoln cradling his son's body in the graveyard. Saunders spins a moving, often hilarious tale with multiple perspectives, narrators, realities. It's nothing like I expected, and a complete breath of fresh air to the idea of a novel. And James recommends for nonfiction, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me by Sherman Alexie, a hilarious, heartbreaking memoir of the extremely talented author and his extremely tricky relationship with his mother. And as a middle school teacher, he says, I feel I must add a young adult, The Inquisitor's Tale, or The Three Magical Children and Their Holy Dog by Adam Gidwitz, a freewheeling riff on the storytelling of the Canterbury Tales, complete with medieval-inspired illuminations on pages. This adventure is told by a bar full of patrons whose paths have crossed, or might yet cross, with the unique titular characters. On the kids' book point, Rachel in Jamaica, who we heard from earlier, sent this recommendation from her 7-year-old. She says he is unbearably excited to read Philip Pullman's The Book of Dust, which just came out. If your kids have not entered Pullman's Dark Materials series, well, hopefully they will like it as much as my kid, who loves Pullman to no end. And Howie and Barry has these kids' book recommendations: Sandra Boynton's Barnyard Dance, Anything Toot and Puddle by Holly Hobby, Thank You Bear by Greg Foley, and Dr. Seuss Always Bring Wit and Smiles. That's pretty much the reading level that I'm at right now. Sandra Boynton, or
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's wonderful. And in fact, we just started reading. My son turns 4 in December, and we just started going through all the Roald Dahl books. And some are appropriate at this age, and some are not. James and the Giant Peach was great. And now we're reading E.B. White's classic, of course, which I'm blanking on.
Charlotte's Web.
Yes, Charlotte's Web. And we haven't gotten to the spider yet, so we're just in the piglet phase, which is a pretty wonderful phase. All right, I want to hear more recommendations. Claire, do you have a recommendation?
I have a great book that I've enjoyed. It's called You Can't Touch My Hair by Phoebe Robinson. And Phoebe Robinson is a comedian. I think she's hysterical. And these are essays on race, gender, pop culture. They're pretty light, but they kind of pack a punch. She definitely couches her commentary in humor quite effectively, and that's a real fun but also enlightening read.
Phoebe Robinson is one of the co-hosts of one of my favorite podcasts,
yes,
Two Dope Queens, which it's just, I mean, I could listen to that podcast every day, all the time. They are wonderful. And Phoebe, what a talented comedian and writer and thinker.
Yeah, it translates to the page, too.
Oh, good. Amy, what about for you?
Well, I'm going to go back to the idea of making sense of what's going on in the world. And a book that was nominated for the 2010 National Book Award for Nonfiction is Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea by Barbara Demick. She gives a little history about how North Korea became an industrialized communist country and then collapsed into poverty and starvation. So it's nice to get that history. But the real meat of the book comes from the stories of North Korean defectors. And it's a really strong book. It's heart-wrenching. The stories are horrific, but there's also courage and hope, and it gives us a glimpse into this mystery that is North Korea.
That sounds interesting. And it doesn't feel like more work to, like you're just going through more news to read
that?
I
feel like the stories of the defectors are, in a way, a novelization. She's a journalist, so it's a journalistic style, but really easy to read in that sense.
And it gives you that perspective into individuals' motivations and viewpoints that are kind of astonishing to those of us in the West. So it It's really an eye-opening book.
Hmm. Joanna's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Joanna. What are you recommending?
Hi. I'm recommending this amazing novel called Homegoing. The author is Yah Gyasi, and this book starts in, I think, the 1600s in the slave trade, and it follows generations, some families who stayed in Africa and some who were kidnapped and brought here. And the book takes you all the way up to the modern times. And we were talking about trying to understand what's happening in our world. And it's such an incredible, vivid picture of how we got to where we are now and how we can maybe start with listening to stories like this to come to terms with the world that we have.
So again, it's Homegoing by Yah Gyasi, right, Joanna?
Yes, I got it at my amazing local bookstore, Vermont Bookshop, and I just loved this book. I read all the time, but this is one of the best novels I've ever read.
Wow, that's high praise too. Joanna, thank you so much. Boy, we are really getting the hyperbole in today's show. Andrea, you started us off with the Princess Bride book, so I'm going to give you one more chance here. High praise for something.
Well, I want to put a plug in for a children's picture book. This is by the dynamic duo Mac Barnett and John Klassen. I like their books because they're kind of snarky, and I enjoy snarky humor for kids. But this story, I think, is basically a tale of how come the wolf howls at the moon so sadly. It starts with a poor mouse getting swallowed by a wolf, and he's miserable. And lo and behold, there's somebody else living in the wolf's stomach, and there's a duck. And the duck says, I may have been swallowed, but I haven't been eaten. And they have a wonderful time in there. They end up having to save the wolf's life from a hunter, and in exchange, they get to continue living in there, which is a lovely place because when you're inside, you're not worried about being eaten. It's all good. And that's why the wolf howls at the moon, because when they have their mouse and duck parties, it creates quite a tummy upset for the poor wolf. And it's hysterical, and the pictures are beautiful, and snarky kids and unsnarky kids, I think, will all like it.
So it sounds like a nice segue for your book about the food chain.
Yeah, I know. We have different stages and stages. We're going through
the
all
non-realistic food chain. You know, we don't want kids to think that people actually live inside stomachs.
No, preferably not. But there are so many fairy tales about that and biblical stories and whatnot. Right. I mean, it seems like a recurring theme.
And they have a lot of fun in there. They have a record player. So what more do you need?
Yeah, if you have a record player, I can just imagine the echoes. We have a few more recommendations before we have to go. Dennis in Burlington actually emailed us his holiday literary wish list. So if you're a friend of Dennis in Burlington, Dennis says, the books I would like to receive: Grant by Ron Chernow, Arthur Vandenberg, The Man in the Middle of the American Century by Hendrik Meher. Okay, so we've got two books for Dennis's family and friends. Jen in West Bolton posted on Facebook, my husband and I both tore through June by Miranda Beverly Whitmore last month and thoroughly enjoyed it. And Nick in Burlington says, the original Vermonters, Native Inhabitants Past and Present. Boy, we could go on forever, but if any of those books inspire you, you can share your recommendations at vpr.net, or you can wait and see. Our list will come out. It'll be at vpr.net, all of the books we talked about today. Amy Olson is library director at Lanphier Memorial Library in Hyde Park. Claire Benedict co-owns Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, and Andrea Jones co-owns the Galaxy Bookshop in Hardwick. Thanks so much to all three of you for being on the show today. I loved this.
Thank you, Jane.
And if you're like me, listeners, I'm going to just spend a few more minutes pretending that I will have time in 2018 to read every single book we talked about today. So that's the bubble I'm in. Don't burst it yet.